From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Baltimore City and the U.S. Justice Department this month reached a court-enforceable consent decree that mandates a wide array of reforms in policing. Today, we focus on how police investigate sexual assaults. We speak to Captain Steve Holman, commander of the Special Investigation Section, which includes the unit that investigates sex crimes, about changes in procedures and record-keeping. Up first, two advocates for victims of sexual assault discuss whether the consent decree goes far enough. Lisa Jordan, head of the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault, calls the agreement a good first step, but
it's really going to take some time to see if it's implemented correctly. And I think that we have a long way to go to really gain the confidence of the community.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The U.S. Justice Department and the City of Baltimore reached agreement this month on a court-enforceable consent decree, growing out of the department's blistering critique of the Baltimore Police Department's policies and practices. That report, published last August, described the city's police as dismissive of sexual assault victims and hostile toward sex workers and transgender people. It raised concerns about how officers and detectives question victims and how rigorously they investigate allegations of sexual assault. Today, we're discussing what the consent decree says about how Baltimore's police should handle reports of sexual assault. Joining me is Lisa Jordan, Executive Director of the nonprofit Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault, MCASA, which works to prevent sexual assault, increase access to care for survivors of sexual crimes, and require accountability for all offenders. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. And also with us is Gail Reed, a sexual assault advocate and social worker from Baltimore's Rape Crisis Center, Turnaround. Turnaround is a member of the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you.
Gail, tell me, when you look at the particular pages of the consent decree agreement that deal with how the police should in the future handle reports of sexual assault and how they should keep records, et cetera, are you satisfied with this consent
decree?
I am
satisfied. I think that the decree includes a lot of feedback that was provided to the Department of Justice by survivors and by advocates and other people. I think it covers a lot of ground in terms of investigations and training and policies and procedures that need to be put in place.
I want to get into some of those specifics, but Lisa Jordan, I want to ask you, too, what's your overall reaction to the consent decree? Does it go far enough?
I think it's a good first step, but, you know, it's really going to take some time to see if it's implemented correctly. And I think that we have a long way to go to really gain the confidence of the community and the confidence of sexual assault survivors. You know, for many years, people who have been sexually assaulted, there are some cases that are taken seriously, but there are many more cases where people have not been taken seriously. Their cases have not been investigated. They've been treated disrespectfully by law enforcement, by the government in general. And that doesn't change overnight. You don't simply say to a survivor, hey, we've got a good order in place. And so now everything is going to be great and we're going to take everything you say seriously and we're going to investigate and test your kits. And why believe that? We need to prove it to the community that this is really going to work.
Okay, good point. It needs to be proved. But in that context, can you identify what you think is the most important element of this plan, this consent decree? What will you most have your eyes on?
Yeah, I think that there are two things that we're really going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at the training for officers and whether it really is effective, whether it is holistic, and whether it helps officers investigate thoroughly and in a way that allows survivors to participate in the justice system. I think the other thing we're going to look at very carefully is what Gail's already alluded to, is that how are other parts of the community involved? do we have a functioning sexual assault response team? Do we have respect for the Rape Crisis Center and the advocates there? Are we really reaching out to the community and making sure that we're answering their questions about what happens if you're raped? What will the response be? What are your rights? Where are the places that you can make a choice? And who will be there to support you?
Let me pick up on training, because I was a little confused by what is in the consent decree. It seems to talk about, at least what I saw, seems to focus on training detectives in a few units, specifically the sex offense, family crimes, and child abuse units. But then the very first line after that talks about guidance to patrol, presumably patrol officers, on how to respond to reports of sexual assault. So, Gail, what is your sense of what this consent decree, if encoded by the federal court, will mean for training in this area?
I think training is going to be a really critical piece of this. And the concern is the consent decree involves many, many aspects of police work and many aspects of training. So it's not just sexual assault investigations. It is addressing racial bias. It is also training and working with members of the LGBTQ community, which intersects certainly with our work with sexual violence victims. So I think the concern is you have a department that's already challenged around resources. You know, one of our concerns is the sex offense unit has gone from 20 some detectives to 8 or 9. That's, in my opinion, not really adequate to investigate the cases. So you have resource issues, but then you look at these training demands and they are substantial. And one of the things I've asked our SART to look at is a review of some very good training that is already in place for law enforcement, some national training, and how we can begin to look at what is available to start training officers and investigators now.
Lisa, the consent decree says that police policies and procedures should be, quote, victim-centered and, quote, trauma-informed. What does that mean? How does that look?
Trauma actually causes chemical changes in your brain and in memory formation. And so if there was trauma, whether it's rape or a shooting or a tragic car accident, your brain behaves differently and your memories are formed differently. And if you're an investigator, you need to understand that. You can't expect that a rape victim or a shooting victim or a car accident victim is going to be able to give you that linear story.
And you see this consent decree as leading the Baltimore police to a better understanding of that?
If they follow the dictates and the spirit of this consent order, I do think they'll go in that direction. The resources are there. The consent decree should help the Baltimore Police Department use those resources and move forward.
That is Lisa Jordan of the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with me is Gail Reed of Baltimore's Rape Crisis Center Turnaround. We're talking about the consent decree reached by the U.S. Justice Department and the City of Baltimore and what it will mean for sexual assault investigations in the city. You have mentioned SART, the Sexual Assault Response Team, which was created in 2010. It's made up of advocates, healthcare workers, police, and prosecutors who audit sexual assault investigations in Baltimore. The consent decree states that the city and the police department must, quote, evaluate and revise, close quote, the policies governing this group. Lisa, how would you rate the functioning of the Sexual Assault Response Team?
I think it's been extremely rocky over the past few years. I think we had a coming together and a revitalization of the SART in 2010. And since then, there have been a lot of changes just in the city, in the department, and it's lost its focus. These are nationally recognized multidisciplinary teams that include not only people who are working on the investigation, but also advocates who are striving to hold them accountable and to help people understand the perspective of victims. So by their nature, they're contentious. they are places where we should hash out difficult policies and really figure out the best way to respond to survivors. Baltimore City's really been struggling with that, with the understanding of the role of the Rape Crisis Center, the role of the victim rights attorney, the role of police, prosecutor, the city. Each one of us have our own roles, and sometimes we're going to disagree. That's good, that's healthy. And the Baltimore City SART really needs to accept that, embrace it, and use that energy to improve things for survivors.
Is it on that course yet, or is that course yet to be reached?
I think it's yet to be reached, and I'm very interested in seeing Mayor Pugh and her reaction. I knew her as a senator in Annapolis, and she was always an advocate for survivors of sexual violence, and I'm hopeful that she will take an interest in this and really provide the leadership that team needs to make sure that everybody knows they have to be at the table, even if they don't agree with one another.
How should the police department work to rebuild trust in the community so that victims of sexual assault feel comfortable reporting it?
I think in part it's helpful to hear some acknowledgement from the police department about maybe some problems that have taken place within sexual assault investigations. It's difficult for victims to come forward. And we certainly talk with people on the advocacy side of things, but I'm not sure the police department itself really ever gets much feedback from the community or from individual victims. Because if someone's had a very negative and harmful interaction with the police, they're just not going to go back there or bring some kind of complaint forward. So I don't know that I have a great answer for you on this, but I think that it's really, again, something the SART has talked about in the past and should be struggling with, is how do we get feedback from the community? The police department and the mayor's office really do need to hear from victims about what their experience has been like.
I'm grateful to you both for pointing out some of the dimensions of the consent decree that aren't immediately obvious. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for caring about this issue. It's hugely important that the media is watching, and please keep watching.
Lisa Jordan, Executive Director of the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Gail Reed, Director of Victim Advocacy for the Rape Crisis Center Turnaround. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A quick break here. When we come back, we'll speak with Captain Steve Holman, who leads the Police Department Special Investigation Section. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. The U.S. Justice Department's investigation into the Baltimore Police Department concluded with a 164-page report published last August. Since then, DOJ and the city worked together to draft a court-enforceable consent decree that mandates policing reforms. That decree is now before a federal judge. Looking back, the DOJ's investigation, which drew on training materials, policies, and data from 2010 to 2015, found severe shortcomings in the Baltimore Police Department's investigation of sexual assault. The Justice Department noted that fewer than one in four rape investigations were closed due to the arrest of a suspect, and that BPD detectives rarely sought to identify or interview potential witnesses. The investigation also concluded that the method of questioning by officers often placed blame on victims of sexual assault and showed an undue skepticism of their allegations. Captain Steve Holman joins me by phone. He took over the city's Special Investigation Section, which includes the unit that investigates sex crimes, in January, a year ago. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, thank for having me.
So you were new in Special Investigation Section, or new to head it, when the Justice Department published its investigation last August. What was your reaction to those findings?
Well, when I took over in January of last year, or late December of last year, we were actually in the midst of the review or the investigation. So I was involved in some of the document requests and some of the conversations that we had with the DOJ. We kind of looked at that in conjunction with my review of the section as a new commander. So a lot of the, or at least some of the things that ended up in the findings report weren't a shock to me, particularly in the area of documenting the investigations. And we actually implemented a lot of changes and updates to the way we document our cases prior to the DOJ finding report even coming out.
What changes have you instituted since you have been in charge?
I really felt that the investigations were being conducted thoroughly, and I thought that the detectives were doing a really, really good job. However, some of the documentation was lacking. And part of the, I guess, hurdle or restrictions was the electronic system that we have is decades old and severely outdated. That said, there were some tweaks that we could make to that system to make it much more efficient for detectives. One of the biggest things I think that we did in terms of case management is we looked at the anatomy of an investigation. We talked with other agencies, other detective squads. What does homicide do during their investigations? What do the robbery folks do? And again, our counterparts, you know, in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Boston. And then also working with our partners through SART, which is the Sexual Assault Response Team, to kind of look at what best practices were for individual investigations. And what we came up with was a automated checklist that now is automatically populated into each of the electronic cases. It sounds kind of simple, but it really gives a detective a roadmap of 30 or so core investigative tasks that should be completed for each case. One of the examples that I like to use is CCTV, for example. Maybe not something that a detective would necessarily worry about 10, 20 years ago, but now that's part of the routine investigation. You go out to a crime scene or an area where, you know, a crime is alleged to be occurred, you want to look for those cameras, whether they're private or city-owned. And what I found was speaking with the detectives, oftentimes that was done. But if there weren't any results from that, it wasn't always documented in the case file.
And I appreciate hearing that, and I credit what you're saying. But as you know, the description in the Justice Department went way beyond some stats not matching that perhaps could be attributed to failure to document steps that were taken. The Justice Department described attitudes and questioning techniques that were affirmatively dismissive of people making allegations of sexual assault. Do you really think that it was primarily a record-keeping problem?
Based on my experience and my observation, I did not and I have not observed the type of behavior that was described in the report. And, you know, I'm not going to dispute the findings report, but I will say that those portions that you're referencing, I think, were very anecdotal and not indicative of my observation of the unit. One of the advocacy groups that we work with very closely is Turnaround. We refer nearly all of our sexual assault victims on the adult side to Turnaround. And in 2013, which was right in the middle of the scope of this DOJ investigation, they gave us an award for, you know, our treatment to victims and our working with their organization and how we respond to victims. I would also say that the unit and the section, both prior to my arrival and since I've arrived, have made a lot of what I think on the outside would look like small changes, but I think are very important in keeping with like a trauma-informed response. One of the examples, and again, it seems kind of small, but we upgraded the carpet in the office. The office carpet was 20 years old. It wasn't an inviting environment for either the detectives to work in or, you know, victims and witnesses. Years ago, a victim used to be interviewed in the same type of interview room that a defendant or suspect would be interviewed in. So within this last year, with the work of our partners at the Mayor's Office on Criminal Justice and a nonprofit, Mission 14, we completely upgraded a victim waiting room and a victim interview room. Everything from the paint on the wall to the textures of the carpet and the artwork is all designed to give the victim a calming sense, a sense of empowerment, and I really are one of the largest departments in the country that have rooms like that of any kind.
That's Captain Steve Holman, commander of the Baltimore Police Department Special Investigations Section, which includes the unit that investigates sex crimes. We're talking about the consent decree between the Baltimore Police, between Baltimore City and the U.S. Department of Justice. What do you make of the consent decree? Will it improve investigation of sex crimes? Is it too burdensome on your unit?
Our portion of the consent decree, as it's specific to sex crimes, is obviously just a small part of the overall decree. And we're in a really good place to ensure compliance. And I won't disagree with any of the mandates that the consent decree is giving to the sex offense unit. And I 100% believe that we will be in compliance and we're in a good position to be in compliance. And in fact, I think our policies, our procedures are really some of the best in the country. They either meet or exceed national best practices. And I would note that the findings report and the consent decree really didn't have an issue with our policies. I think that our partnerships with SART, again, exceed or meet national standards. So with the exception of some of the technology challenges that we're going to have, we're already hitting the ground running. Vast majority of the things in our portion of the consent decree we're either already doing or have plans to implement in the very near future.
I'm interested in what you say about the staffing of the police department. As I imagine you know, the Baltimore Sun reported that Mayor Pugh will provide the police department with $3 million to hire 100 additional officers. The department already has 125 open, unfilled positions. Do you think the police department will have sufficient resources to meet the terms of the consent decree?
You know, I don't want to speak on the overall agency, but I know that in terms of special investigation, I mean, just like anybody else, everybody wants more staff and more people and more resources. But I'm 100% confident we'll be able to get the job done with the staffing that I have in place. And in terms of the overall department, I know that Commissioner Davis and Deputy Commissioner Palmier have good concrete plans in place to address the crime and the overall plan with the staffing that we have.
How many investigators do you have on sexual assault
cases? So currently in the sex offense unit on the adult side, the unit is commanded by a lieutenant, detective lieutenant. We have four sergeants, one of which is a cold case supervisor, and we have eight detectives that work on what we call the hot side, and then we have two detectives that work cold case.
And how does that compare to 3 or 4 years ago?
3 or 4 years ago, we had 21 detectives total.
So it's like down by half?
Yes.
Why?
The department as a whole has lost people through retirements, attrition. So it's not just the sex offense unit that is being affected. It's everybody.
You mentioned SART, the Sexual Assault Response Team. It brings together advocates, healthcare workers, police, and prosecutors to audit sexual assault investigation. Do you think the SART, the Sexual Assault Response Team, at this time is able to meet that goal?
I think that in terms of the auditing function, and I think that there's kind of a miscommunication when it comes to SART. Like, I think that there's this notion that SART is designed to be the oversight body of the BPD sex offense unit, and their sole responsibility is to audit our cases. The reality is that SART is a multidisciplinary team, and the goal really is to ensure that best practices are being followed collectively. And auditing cases or reviewing cases is just a mechanism to kind of ensure that those best practices are being followed by all of the partners. So the case review isn't just to make sure BPD is doing what they're supposed to be doing, but also ensuring that the advocate groups are responding in a way that is helpful. You know, the medical forensic safe exams are being conducted in a way that's helpful. So in terms of our ability to comply with the consent decree, I don't see any issue with complying with that portion of the consent decree. In fact, we just had our monthly SART meeting, and you know, we're all looking forward to moving forward with the consent decree, complying with it, and you know, each of the SART members have pledged their support in helping the BPD accomplish the goal of compliance.
Last question. What would you say to reassure people who are reluctant to report incidents of sexual assault to the police?
I would say that the BPD is committed to, first and foremost, treating any victim survivor with the respect and dignity that they deserve. That's goal number one. That's what we strive for. The second piece of that is that my detectives in this unit, in this department, we're going to be relentless in finding the truth and finding those that are responsible for perpetrating the crime. We're going to work closely with our partners in the state's attorney's office and our partners in SART to get the best outcome that's available. That would be my promise and my section's promise to anybody that would want to report a sexual assault.
Thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Captain Steve Holman, commander of the Baltimore Police Department's Special Investigations Section, which investigates sex crimes. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.